Measure 91 means regulating and legalizing marijuana for adults, freeing up time and generating revenue so police can better protect us from serious, violent, and unsolved crimes. The system needs changing. Yes, on 91, it's about time.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Yeah! Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, October 16th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us. We've got an action-packed show for today, covering the next 2 hours of marijuana news, information, interviews, culture, highlights, entertainment, and more right here on the Russ Melville Show. We are just, what, 19 days away, 18 days away from legalizing marijuana? Something like that here in the state of Oregon and the state of Alaska, and of course, medical marijuana in Florida. We've got major votes coming up, and we hope you join us on election night, Tuesday, November 4th, for our Marijuana Election Night 2014. We'll have reporters from every location that's got a marijuana vote happening, and you'll be the first to know when we get the results in from the polls. So check out Marijuana Election Night 2014, this November 4th. It's a Tuesday. You get done voting, check out 420radio.org for all the results live from the polls. On today's show, it is Cops Say Legalized Drugs Day. So we've got Patrick Heintz. He's a retired corrections officer / drug counselor from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, who will tell us why prohibition doesn't work and what we need to do to improve the situation. Also on today's show, time for a radical rant, because I've been getting some posts from people here in Oregon. And it's not as bad as it was in Washington or California, but there are still some people here in Oregon who don't think Measure 91 is something we ought to pass. Now, I'm not talking about cops. I'm not talking about church people or any conservatives or retirees or anything. I'm talking about our people, marijuana smokers in the state of Oregon, who think we ought to just wait till 2016. Measure 91's just not good enough for them. Well, I'm going to take some time to debunk that in the radical rant today, so stick around for the end of the show. We're going to get right into that. And then in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, I have got my appearance. Now, I played you my recording from my appearance with Jefferson Smith on X-Ray FM last night, or yesterday, I should say. But now we've got the full show. And in hour two, we'll play the full show for you. You'll get to hear Josh Marquis before me and Kevin Sabet after me. And I haven't even heard the Kevin Sabet part, so I am looking forward to that. Stay tuned for that in Toker Talk Radio at the top of the next hour. Also on today's show, in drug war data mining, the state of medical marijuana states, that's it. In drug war data mining, we're going to take a look at the difference between medical marijuana states and prohibition states as far as how many kids use marijuana. I think the data won't shock you, but it would definitely shock some of the prohibitionists out there. Also on the show, for Behind the Headlines, we're going to take a look at the annual scare of Halloween medibles, that for some reason we would want to put medicated edible candy into some kid's trick-or-treat bag. We'll debunk that in Behind the Headlines, which comes up right after the 420 radio news. And that's next, right after this first break. And in the news today, we've got a new appointee or nominee for the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division that looks very promising for marijuana reform. We've got the new sales figures from Washington State that have just been posted online, with some surprising data about Vancouver, Washington, just north of me. A federal judge says that Lake County, California, gosh, they have to get a warrant if they want to search pot growers' homes. Who knew? In Colorado, a dispensary is going to be part of a true TV reality series. We've got an update on the case of Jacob Lavaro, the Texas teen who was busted for selling pot brownies and faced a life sentence. And we've got Florida cities already gearing up for medical marijuana moratoriums, even though they haven't passed medical marijuana yet. All that's coming up in the 420 Radio News, a part of the Russ Melville Show, right here on 420radio.org. Stick around. We're back with the news right after this. We'll be right back.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420.
In all my years on the streets, it's hard to recall a single time where marijuana use itself was the cause of a violent incident. As a police officer, I do believe that passing ballot measure 2 will allow law enforcement to focus on serious issues in Alaska. To me, the regulation of marijuana means safer communities. I'm voting yes on 2.
This communication was paid for by the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Top contributors are Marijuana Policy Project, Drug Policy Alliance, and Thomas...
Stony Sundays with Coral Reefer from San Francisco, California. Replaying Mondays at 1 Pacific on 4...
Voting yes on 2 will allow doctors to recommend the medicine they feel will ease the pain and suffering of thousands of sick Floridians. Yes on 2 allows medical marijuana use under the strict supervision of a doctor, only for debilitating conditions and diseases such as cancer and MS. 23 states now keep government and politicians out of the doctor-patient relationship. And it's worked. Vote yes on 2 and trust our doctors to do what's best.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 16th, 2014. The newly named acting head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division has called for the legalization and regulation of marijuana, putting her ahead of Attorney General Eric Holder on that issue. Vinita Gupta, the senior American Civil Liberties Union attorney who will take over the Civil Rights Division next week, wrote a CNN column last month praising the legalization and taxation of marijuana in Washington and Colorado. Gupta wrote that those who, quote, seek a fairer criminal justice system unclouded by racial bias must, at a minimum, end quote, demand that the government decriminalize possession of marijuana. She also called the laws legalizing marijuana in Washington and Colorado, quote, racial justice victories, end quote, and said the war on drugs has been, quote, a war on communities of color, end quote. Regulators in Washington state are trying to make it easier for financial institutions to track their pot-related customers. In the last few days, the state's Liquor Control Board has started posting the sales activity of licensed marijuana growers, sellers, and processors online, along with any warnings or fines issued to businesses caught out of compliance. The data show that Vancouver, just across the river from Portland, Oregon, sold the most marijuana of any city in Washington at $2.7 million. That's from just 2 pot shops and is almost double Seattle's $1.4 million with 3 pot shops. New Vansterdam in Vancouver is the top-selling store in the state, and Main Street Marijuana is number 4. Vancouver's 2 pot shops also outsold 4 pot shops each in Spokane, Bellingham, and Tacoma. Total statewide sales year-to-date is almost $14 million since July. A federal judge says authorities in a Northern California county must obtain a warrant before raiding homes to seize pot plants. U.S. District Judge Thelton Henderson issued the ruling Tuesday in a case brought by Lake County residents whose homes were searched without warrants. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, Henderson said that residents would likely succeed in showing their constitutional rights were violated. Lake County approved an ordinance in June that restricts the growing of medical marijuana. Lawyers for the county defended the searches, saying the ordinance declared illegal marijuana cultivation an immediate threat. But Henderson said the county had failed to explain how cultivating more than 6 mature marijuana plants posed an imminent danger. The burgeoning Colorado marijuana industry is heading to reality television. True TV has ordered a pilot for Medicine Man, about the family behind the largest single dispensary in the state where marijuana has been legal since January 1st. This marks the first TV series about a Colorado marijuana business since the legalization.
10 members of the Williams family spanning 3 generations work in the business, which has a strict code of conduct for its employees. The show will chronicle the struggle to build a marijuana dynasty, as well as the trials of the Williams family's unusual life, as they ride the wave of a modern-day green gold rush. Chris Lynn, president and head of programming for True TV, said, quote, "We're very excited to be the first network to put the new legal marijuana business front and center in a brand new television series." A teenage boy whose case made national news when he was facing up to life in prison for possessing pot brownies in Williamson County, Texas, has pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. Jacob Lavaro, age 19, pleaded guilty today to the second-degree felony of possession of THC, said his lawyer, Jack Holmes. Lavaro agreed to the plea in exchange for a sentence of 7 years of probation. A second-degree felony carries a punishment ranging from 2 to 20 years in jail. Williamson County prosecutors had previously dropped a first-degree felony drug possession charge against Lavaro, which involved the marijuana brownies. The charge was controversial because it was based on the entire weight of the brownies, including the chocolate, flour, and sugar. The rush to delay medical marijuana dispensaries from opening in some cities in Florida is on, even before Florida voters decide on the marijuana measure on November 4th. So far, at least 6 municipalities in Palm Beach County have given preliminary approval to moratoriums that would temporarily prevent medical marijuana treatment centers and dispensaries from opening in their areas. Boca Raton was one of the first to consider halting marijuana treatment centers and dispensaries from opening for at least a year. Following suit were Boynton Beach, North Palm Beach, Lake Clark Shores, and the Village of Gulf. Also, Delray Beach, Haverhill, and Hypoluxo officials say they are going to discuss at their meetings. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 16th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville.
Radio is 24-hour marijuana.
The doctor has the right to prescribe OxyContin or any type of prescription like that. They should have the right to recommend medical cannabis for that same patient.
In the 1980s, my mother asked me to help a friend of hers who was terribly nauseous and vomiting every single day from her treatment, and my mother begged me, as since I was a young adult, could I find marijuana for this woman. And it's a crime that even all these many years later, we still have to illegally get this treatment that really makes a difference for people.
The real concept is Amendment 2 would allow for medical decisions to be made by doctors instead of politicians.
We're asking you to please vote yes on Amendment 2 November 4th because there are patients that need medication in this state and they deserve it.
I am.
We're United for Care.
I'm Pete Tutmark. I spent 33 years in law enforcement, from deputy sheriff to sergeant, working 10 hours a day protecting Oregonians. Last year in Oregon, there were 13,000 citations and arrests for marijuana. That takes time. Time better spent solving murders, rape cases, finding missing children. The system's broken. Measure 91 regulates marijuana for adults, so police have time to fight serious, violent, and unsolved crimes. It's about time.
Welcome back, everybody. 14 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines. And you may have seen numerous headlines across many media outlets lately concerning Halloween. The trick-or-treat season is upon us. And I know when I was a kid, the big scare about Halloween was don't let your kid get a hold of any treats that have razor blades or pins in them. That was always the scare, that somebody would be hiding razor blades or pins in the chocolate bars or the candy somehow. And I never actually saw a news story ever in my life where this was true. The Snopes website debunks it. You know, it's been known as an urban legend for generations now. But now there's a new urban legend that's trying to take its place, and it's the menace of marijuana-infused Halloween candy. And hat tip to our friend Jacob Sullum out at Forbes magazine and Reason.com for pointing this out, because this is now just become an annual rite. The most recent one is the Denver Police Department, and this has gotten play on ABC News and other outlets, warning parents that there could be recreational marijuana treats hidden in your kid's Halloween candy. Make sure that you don't let your kid eat any unwrapped treats. You know, that's good advice any time, isn't it? That you shouldn't let your kid eat an unwrapped candy that he got from a stranger. But of course, because marijuana has become legalized and it generates, you know, between marijuana and frightening parents about their kids, you can't get much better ratings grabbers at the local news station. That's what's going on here. They're trying to scare the hell out of people about something for which there is no evidence it has ever happened. This is something we've been hearing in the marijuana movement since 1996, when California first legalized medical marijuana. But you get CNN with headlines like, Colorado parents have a new fear to factor in this Halloween, a very adult treat ending up in their kids' candy bags. So, you know, there's a story from 2007 where the DEA is claiming kids and parents need to be careful in case kids get a hold of this candy. Halloween is coming up. What do we got? Here's one from 2010. Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Parents, be on the lookout for marijuana-laced candy, soda, freezer pops, and other edibles that could be handed out on Halloween. We felt obliged to share this information with parents and the community because you really can't tell the difference. In 2008, it even went beyond marijuana. The Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum warned people, quote, federal and state law enforcement agencies have reported that flavored drugs, particularly methamphetamines, heroin, and marijuana, are circulating through the United States and could be ingested by unsuspecting children, end quote. It's not just marijuana treats, it's grape heroin and strawberry meth. And again, no evidence whatsoever these things have ever existed. The DEA has never been able to confirm this. And anytime there's a seizure of any sort of medicated edibles around Halloween, the press just jumps right to the assumption that it had to be a plot to get the kids stoned. Just last October, in 2013, at Westchester State University in Pennsylvania, campus police found 40 pounds of marijuana-infused candy that had been shipped in from California, right? And so the authorities, the district attorney said there's no indication students plan to distribute the candy to children for Halloween. And the also said authorities believe the candy was meant to be shared and sold among university students. But the Associated Press, and then they just can't help themselves, the district attorney jumps on to say, the last thing we want to see is drug-laced candy hitting the streets. Folks, this just does not happen. 2 years ago in 2012, Buffalo, New York, there was a college party and they found 640 pot lollipops that had been shipped in from California. The Associated Press begins their story, just in time for Halloween. Again, just trying to scare the hell out of people. In 2013, KYTV, the Springfield, Missouri, police intercepted a package of cannabis candy from Colorado to Joplin, Missouri. The sheriff says, quote, Halloween is just around the corner, and we want everyone to know that candy like these lemon drops are being circulated throughout the area, a safety concern for the kids. I hope it was never intended to give to kids or to harm children, but it is scary, especially with Halloween coming up, that they might be in contact with something like that, so it's frightening. Folks, there is a very, very simple debunk to anyone who thinks that this is possible, and it's the same debunk that goes for when they talk about PCP-laced joints. Or cocaine-laced joints. And that is a very simple factor. Edibles cost a shit ton of money. You want to get yourself a Chiba Chew, it might cost $15-$20. You want to get a kid a Tootsie Roll, you can get a bag of 100 of them for like, you know, $5, $4 at the Walmart or whatever. You can sell it 4 cents for a Tootsie Roll, or $15 for the Chiba Chew. What am I going to put in the kids' Halloween candy? It's just absurd. Nobody who is a marijuana consumer has any desire to play some sort of stupid Halloween prank to get kids high. It's just ridiculous scaremongering, and it needs to stop. Don't let your kids have unwrapped candy, period, but don't try to blame that on us.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
Well, be careful, Homer. It might be laced with PCP. God. Marijuana has a unique power to addle the brains of those who do not use it. Gotta take a break. 420 in Denver. We'll be back right after this with some drug war data mining.
Radio, the activist radio station. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net.
You can find information for all our 420radio.org shows by visiting the control panel at the top of 420radio.org. Click schedule to find out the latest times for your shows in your time zone. Click show guide to learn more about each show. Thanks for supporting 420radio.org.
It was a nightmare scenario last May for one Southern Oregon woman. It's 4 in the morning and someone's trying to break in.
911 emergency.
My ex-boyfriend is trying to break into my house. He put me in the hospital a few weeks ago and I've been trying to keep him away.
But because of budget cuts, the sheriff's office is only open during weekday business hours.
I don't have anybody to send out there. So if he comes inside the residence and assaults you, can you ask him to go away or...
He did break into the home, and he did rape and choke this woman. Meanwhile, it was announced that the Oregon Sheriff's Association made a $100,000 donation to the campaign against Measure 91, the initiative to legalize marijuana. So, there's enough money to protect people from marijuana, but not rapists? Measure 91 devotes 35% of tax revenues from marijuana sales to state and local police. Vote yes on Measure 91. A message from the Russ Belville Show, not endorsed or sponsored by the Measure 91 campaign.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour, and today I have learned some very, very interesting data about marijuana and medical marijuana in this country. And we're going to go back to the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Data Archive, and this is the two-year RDAS of the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. In previous videos, I've shown you how to get to here. I will throw the link into the chat room if anyone wants to follow along. Or you can always email me, russ@radicalrust.com, and I can send you the links if that would help. But again, the two-year RDAS gives us a breakdown of the last 10 years' worth of data broken down into two-year chunks. And the reason the RDAS is useful is because it's the one that gives us information on the states. The regular National Survey on Drug Use and Health is just for the nation as a whole. RDAS breaks it down into states, which can make things very, very useful for us. One of the things that we always like to look up in our row variable here is something called IRMJRC. IRMJRC is the marijuana recency. How recent have you smoked marijuana? When you run that table, it's very quick to find, and let me switch to a bigger screen here so people can see, that when we're talking about recent marijuana use, within the past 30 days, 6.3% of the people have used marijuana, 4.5% within the past year or so. So we got about 10.8% of the people that smoke marijuana on an annual basis. And in previous episodes, we have broken that down by
selecting a particular state and also by selecting people of particular ages. Today, I want to take a look at how we can break this down and find out whether or not medical marijuana use in a state has shifted the age, the average age of a marijuana smoker. Now, we have another variable we can add in the column figure called CAT age, which is categorical age or age category. And it breaks down into multiple levels. There's 3 levels, 5 levels, 6 levels, and so on. The 3 levels will do for that for now. The 3 levels are 12 to 17 year olds, 18 to 25 year olds, and 26 plus, or as I like to say, teens, college age, and adult. So when we look at it that way, we find that 7.3% of teens are smoking monthly, 17.2% of college age are smoking monthly, and 4.3% of 26 and older are smoking monthly. But if you'd like to see how this has changed over time, we can add another variable called year pair indicator. Year pair indicator tells us which of those 5 pairs of years the data comes from. By putting it in the control field, we get a separate page for each of the year pair indicators. Running that table will give us our information. And to make it easier to read, we can take off the bar chart option, which you can't quite see on the screen here. Let me see if I can squeeze this in just a bit. There we go. We can take off the bar chart option so we don't have all these charts in between and revise the display. And from that data, what we're going to find is that teens, 8% of teens were using marijuana monthly in 2002-2003. That has gone down to 7.6% of teens in 2010-2011. Likewise, when we look at the 26 and older, it's to 4.8% now, where it used to be at 4% before. It seems like over the past decade, the ages have shifted a bit. Shifted toward older folks. Now, the kicker. Can we get that down to whether or not they are a medical marijuana state? What we'll do this time is we'll take the CAT age feature and put that into, let's see, let's just change this right here. Let's go and get the, instead of CAT age, there is a variable that we can use called med marijuana, M-E-D-M-J, and whether or not your state has medical marijuana in it. So we'll break down how often people use. We will look at their medical marijuana use by each year pair indicator. Running that table shows us some very interesting information. That we find in states with medical marijuana use, use in the past 30 days was 11%, but about 6% when there was no medical marijuana. As we move to later on, non-medical marijuana use has gone up marijuana use has gone up in the non-medical marijuana states, but stayed relatively the same, 11.2 to 11.6, in the medical marijuana states. So it doesn't seem as if medical marijuana has had a significant impact on how much people are using. We'll have more information on how to break down this data on the next edition of Drug War Data Mining that we'll do on tomorrow's show. I'll show you how you can break all this down by age group.
420 Radio, the home.
I'm Lori Constantino, former chief prosecutor for the state of Alaska. As a retired law enforcement official, I know our current marijuana prohibition laws just aren't working. In fact, they've caused far more problems than they've solved. It's time for Alaska to take a more sensible approach. That's why I'm voting yes on ballot measure 2.
I'm Bill Parker, former deputy commissioner of corrections in Alaska, and I'm voting yes on 2. For me, it's a matter of public safety. We have limited law enforcement resources, and they should be spent addressing serious crimes, not arresting thousands of Alaskans for marijuana.
And I'm Kim Cole, a local high school teacher and a mom, and I want to see marijuana handled in a way that actually benefits Alaskans. The marijuana industry should be managed by responsible businesses and not criminals. This means safer communities, revenue for the state, and jobs for Alaskans. I'm voting yes on 2.
This communication was paid for by the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol. Top contributors are Marijuana Policy Project, Drug Policy Alliance, and Thomas Cody Swift.
Treating marijuana as a crime in Oregon has failed. Police are spending way too much time working on simple marijuana possession cases. Too many people are being busted. Oregon wastes millions of taxpayer dollars while illegal drug dealers are making a huge untaxed profit. But after Measure 91 passes, we'll have a better approach, a smarter approach, like what's happening in Washington, where marijuana-related arrests have plummeted. Oregon police will be able to refocus their precious and limited resources on serious crime, and Oregon's Measure 91 can save and generate millions of dollars. Oregon needs a better approach to marijuana. Vote yes on Measure 91, paid for by Yes on 91.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past and time for us to talk to another great speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We got Patrick Heintz on the line. He's a former corrections officer and drug counselor out of Massachusetts. How you doing, Patrick?
Pretty well.
All right. Welcome back to the show. And of course, the topic coming up, you know, we're just less than 3 weeks away from marijuana election night 2014. We've got Oregon, we've got Alaska, we got Florida voting on both legalization and medical marijuana. And give us your perspective on this from out there on the East Coast as how, you know, New York and Boston, and how are these states up there looking toward our elections and how that might affect you guys in 2016?
Well, of course, everybody is aware that the attitudes on prohibition are changing, not too soon, I suppose, after 40 years of failed policy and $1 trillion and, millions and millions of arrests and so forth, and nothing has changed. So it seems like it's just this horrific waste of resources with the grand accomplishment of nothing as far as, harm reduction or cessation. I think people are just all around the country, especially the electorate, are in favor of some kind of reform. The problem, of course, is that since it's been a funding source for 40 years for different agencies and law enforcement and corrections, it's hard to back away from the trough for some of these entrenched people.
Addicted to the drug war funding, so to speak.
Exactly. Now, I worked as a licensed substance abuse counselor in corrections. And, one of the basic things about substance abuse and addiction is, there's a checklist. If you do this, you know you're addicted and so forth. And all of the things on the list you do it more and more, and it keeps getting worse and worse. Or nothing improves, it interferes with the rest of your life, but you keep on doing it. It has a negative impact on the rest of your life, and you keep on doing it. And all of these checklists about to determine if you're an addict, they apply to the war on drugs. Police departments, they keep arresting more and more people. And yet marijuana doesn't go away. Because they're prioritizing the war on drug activities and spending all the resources and times chasing nonviolent substance abusers, all the closure rates on all the dangerous crimes out there like murder and assault and breaking and entering and so forth, the closure rates on those things are all going up. So they're spending all their time chasing their tails in the drug war and neglecting public safety. So it's as if law enforcement is addicted to the war on drugs.
You know, one of the talking points that we hear from the other side in their opposition to marijuana legalization is that it doesn't need to be a dichotomy. It doesn't have to be prohibition or legalization. There's some sort of third way, and they never really describe what it is, but it seems to involve rehab. Seems to involve this idea that we're shifting our priorities from incarceration to treatment and prevention. And what do you think about that?
Well, I think that is exactly the way to go. The problem is, if you don't do it in a regulated environment, you keep the funding criminal enterprise. So we have, you know, we've been trying to treat a mental health issue, substance abusing, which is self-destructive behavior, and everybody agrees that it's, you know, personality adjustment disorder, a mental health issue, and so forth. But what other health issue do we declare war on in the United States and try and solve it with corrections and incarceration? Nothing. So what we need is a public health approach to addressing substance abuse in our culture. And the perfect example of this, of course, has been Big Tobacco. Mm-hmm. Now, we didn't declare war on Big Tobacco. We didn't start arresting people and make it illegal and so forth. We just gave people some accurate information. And as soon as the Surgeon General's report came out, and we identified tobacco for what it was, it's a habit, it's self-destructive, and it causes death, we've reduced tobacco consumption in America from, in the 50s, it was somewhere around 75% of adults smoked tobacco, and through education and honesty, we've reduced tobacco consumption among adults in America from 75% down to 17%, and that's a public health model of intervention, harms reduction, and cessation. Hmm. And that's how you do it. But you don't have to arrest people first to get them to stop smoking tobacco.
Let me play devil's advocate on that stat, because I use it a lot as well. I point out how much, you know, tobacco smoking has gone down. But one critical difference is that when you tell the truth about tobacco, you're telling the truth about something that's highly toxic and addictive. When you tell the truth about marijuana, you're talking about something that can have health benefits for some people and is non-toxic and non-addictive for most people. So telling the truth about it may not actually reduce use. It may increase use. Any thoughts on that?
Well, of course, all the models overseas, you know, prove conclusively that that's not the case. And one example, for instance, is in Amsterdam, where for years, you know, they have these cafes and people can buy hash and smoke hash and so forth. In that country, compared to America, the age of onset of first use in America is so much lower and so much higher, and the number of kids that are smoking it is minuscule compared to that of America. And when you talk to kids over there and ask them if they go to the cafes and smoke hash, they laugh like it's a joke, and they say, oh, no, that's what the tourists do. It's corny. You know, so, and it's obvious now to almost everyone that marijuana does have a legitimate place in medicine. And that should be determined between a doctor and a patient. And the other thing is, marijuana, just like alcohol, it should be up to, you know, rational adults to determine their relationship with these things based on some real information. So alcohol can be abused. We don't want people abusing it, but it's still available. If marijuana were treated like any other mood-altering substance, like tobacco or alcohol, I think people are not mindless lemmings, and just because it's legal, they're going to go out and become chronic daily marijuana smokers. And in fact, all the polling done says that if all drugs were regulated and legal, would you start doing it? And it's like 0.1% or 0.6% of people say they might try heroin. But at least it would be regulated. Here's another problem with an unregulated environment. And so how, no matter how we regulate it, it should be regulated because, you know, you talk about marijuana, but leaving all drug distribution as the purview of criminal organizations and syndicates is a bad idea. One of the most striking studies I recently read was about Molly. Which is the party drug for raves and so forth. And kids will go to raves and they'll take Molly. The problem with that is because it's an unregulated environment, they went to all these raves, collected Molly, bought it, and then tested it. And it was like 85% of it was actually bath salts and methamphetamine with a little bit of heroin in it. And so because we refuse to take responsibility to regulate this market and we leave that up to criminal organizations, you know, sociopaths, we're putting our children's health in the hands of sociopaths because kids go to college and a significant percentage of them are going to do high-risk behaviors. So at least if it's a regulated, you know, if they're going to use alcohol, they're going to get alcohol that we know what the alcohol content is, and they won't, it won't be grain alcohol, and they won't go blind for making a bad decision.
We're speaking with Patrick Hines from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We've got about a minute left. Patrick, any other thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with?
Well, you know, when I was counseling substance abusers, I said, well, listen, you know, you've been following your plan for a long time, and it really hasn't worked, and, you know, every time you get high, you don't get arrested, but every time you've been arrested, you've been high. So how about we come up with another plan, and you try following this plan for a while, and if you don't like that plan, you can always return to the disaster that has been your plan. So we've been following this disaster for 40 years. So I think we need to try something else. And if it doesn't work, we can always go back to the disaster. But funding crime, you know, giving them billions and billions of dollars each year seems to me to be suicidal.
Yeah, like Einstein said, definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, right?
Right, and so, you know, there's no easy solution to this, but the solution we've chosen is an unmitigated disaster. And being the country that has the highest incarceration rate on the planet, you know, 1 out of 4 human beings on this earth that are incarcerated are in an American jail. And the fact that we have more African Americans under correction supervision today than we had slaves in 1855, in great part as a result of this war on drugs, this is a social policy disaster on par in every regard. As bad as slavery was in 1855.
Thank you, Patrick Hines. Everybody check out leap.cc to get yourself a Leap speaker like Patrick, and thanks for being on the show.
Okay. Keep up the good work.
All right, when we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're debunking the worst fears of the stoners against legalization on Measure 91. Stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. At Royal Queen Seeds, we've got premium feminized cannabis seeds, including auto-flowering varieties for the medical cannabis user. We've got bulk shipments available and new CBD oil. Plus, we accept payment in Visa, MasterCard, and Bitcoin, as well as other methods. Check out our website at royalqueenseeds.com for more information. We are located in the Netherlands, and we have online grow experts ready to help you now at royalqueenseeds.com.
the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Oh, hi, everybody. It's me, Mr. Belville. And you know, when you're in the entertainment business, you have to be traveling coast to coast all the time.
Say, Mr. Bill, you've got a long trip ahead of you. You'll need something to help keep you awake.
Well, I've been really trying to cut down on my coffee lately.
Then how about some drugs?
Oh, no! Drugs are bad, and you kids out there should never, ever use them.
Oh, come on, try some. So remember, kids, say...
Oh, no!
Do drugs.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, firedeuplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email firedeuplawyer@gmail.com.
Handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality, no.
How in the century you have slurred the meaning of the words we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 47 after the hour. And you know, since 2010, something that's been bothering the hell out of me is the phenomenon of stoners against legalization. We saw this crop up in Prop 19 days in 2010 when growers, medical marijuana growers and dispensary owners, mostly in Northern California, used their money and influence to affect other regular cannabis consumers to convince them that voting for their own criminality would be a good idea. We saw an even worse strain of stoners against legalization flare up with I-502 in 2012, when again, medical marijuana growers and dispensary owners used their positions of money and influence to try to convince everyday cannabis consumers to vote for their own criminality. Now, we haven't seen such a virulent strain of that since Washington and Colorado have passed their marijuana legalization, and all the fears of the stoners against legalization failed to come to fruition. You know, like how they'd be shooting hippie fish in a barrel outside a hemp fest with the 5-nanogram DUI, and how anyone who possesses an ounce that wasn't bought in a store would be arrested. All those things turned out to be unfounded hyperbolic scaremongering. But of course, it is a resistant strain, and it still exists in some isolated pockets here in Oregon. I'm on a list called DPFOR, the Drug Policy Foundation, or Forum of Oregon, I think it's Forum of Oregon. And on that list are various people involved in the marijuana movement here, either on the business side or the activism side. And in that list, we've been having a series of discussions about Measure 91, including some people who say that it's no good. Now, to be fair, the person I'm about to quote says that Measure 91 is better than prohibition and he will vote for it, but he's got a number of problems with it. The first problem he seems to have with it is that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission would be in charge. And the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, like a lot of liquor commissions across the country, has some allegations of corruption and malfeasance and mismanagement and so on. And so the point he's making is, well, Measure 91's no good because it didn't create a brand new bureaucracy to deal with marijuana. Now, I can understand that point, but you always have to understand when we're trying to pass ballot measures, we're not passing them for us. We've got to write something that people that don't smoke pot will vote for. And they have other concerns as other than just whether or not people go to jail for pot. That motivates my vote. Anything that keeps me out of jail for pot, I'm voting for it. But for the average person out there that doesn't smoke pot, they don't have a dog in the race, or at least they don't realize they have a dog in the race. They've got other concerns. And one of the concerns they have is the growth of government and big government and more inefficient, wasteful bureaucracies. People are buying the treat marijuana like alcohol idea. And even people that have a problem with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission trust the devil they know more than some unknown devil we would be creating out of whole cloth. Our opponents would paint that as growing the government and big bureaucracy. Another point that was made is that this ballot measure only allows 4 plants per household. This comes from an article that was written on someone's blog. They wrote a letter to the editor and pointed out that it only allows 4 plants per household, and that would be unfair to poor people who would get their houses seized if they had more than 4 plants, especially if they're in roommate situations where each roommate had more than 4 plants. And this is a huge logical flaw that all these people bring to the argument. And that is, they compare what they wish they had to what they're getting. They wish they could have unlimited cultivation. What they're getting is 4 plants. And so they're all pissed off about it. Instead of comparing what you got now versus what you're going to get under legalization. How many plants are allowed per household now? 0. If you have one plant in Oregon, it's a felony, worthy of 10 years in prison at a cost of over $300,000 to the taxpayers. One plant is a felony. And Measure 91 proposes not only to make 4 plants legal, but 5 to 7 plants would just be a ticket. 8 to 15 plants would just be a misdemeanor. You'd have to have 16 plants before it became a felony. So this idea that, 4 plants just isn't enough is ludicrous. Another point made by some of these people is it still criminalizes 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. Now, I have sympathy for that point. I believe if there is an adult age, and that adult age gives you the right to vote and the duty, if you choose to accept it, to serve your country in the military, then by God, that's enough for you to be able to smoke marijuana if you choose. If you're old enough to put a ballot in your hand or carry a rifle in the sand, you're old enough to put a joint in your hand. That's how I feel about the issue. Now, what's going to pass at the ballot box? You put something up that's an 18-year-old legalization and it's going to fail. And it's going to fail big because 18-year-olds are still teenagers and they're still kids that can be in high school. So no way is that going to pass anytime soon when our opponents would be able to come out and say they're legalizing marijuana for teenagers in high school. Never going to happen. Another consideration, and this comes because Measure 91 allocates 35% of its tax revenues to go to law enforcement. Now, there's so many people in our movement who have what I call the fuck the pigs attitude. Fuck those pigs, fucking cops, fucking hate the fucking cops. They got this attitude, right? Folks, you're misplacing your anger. Hate the game, not the player. The game is corrupt. Marijuana prohibition is corrupt. But cops are something we want. Cops are a good thing. It's good to have an armed force accountable to the public to keep down the criminals and psychopaths and sociopaths out there that would choose to create anarchy in our society. That's a good thing to have police. The bad thing is when police have a law to enforce that oppresses us and we're changing that law. And by the way, that 35% that were given to the cops, it's not just a free carte blanche gift to the cops. 15% of it is. 15% goes straight to the state police. No questions asked. State police, here you go, 15%. But the other 20% is divided 10% for the city cops, 10% for the county cops. But half of what they get depends on how many producer, processor, and wholesaler licenses are in the city or county. And the other half of what they get is dependent on how many retailer licenses they have in the city or county. In other words, cities and counties don't get their 10% cut if they don't allow pot shops and growers. And they get more of a cut the more pot shops and growers they allow. So this isn't so much paying off the police as it is bribing the police and the cities and counties to say, you don't get any of the tax money pie unless you let us play in your pool. Another consideration they've got a problem with. One person put up, well, there's no residency requirements. There's no residency requirements. So that just opens the door for Philip Morris and Marlboro to come in and take over the marijuana market. Folks, that ain't going to happen. Altria, the parent company of Philip Morris and Marlboro and all those guys, is a multinational corporation with global reach. Marijuana is still a Schedule I federal substance. The minute Altria gets into the business of buying, selling, or producing a Schedule I federal substance is the minute the federal government hauls them into court and takes even more of their assets than they've already taken. And trust me, Big Tobacco is not interested in getting into another federal courthouse anytime soon. It didn't work out so good for them back in 1998. Another consideration. I actually have this person's whose article's online who writes, quote, "The tax is too high at $35 per ounce and can be raised at any time by the OLCC, which will have a conflict of interest in regulating a product that directly competes with liquor, which it sells in its own stores." Well, that's a little bit of conspiracy thing. First of all, $35 an ounce is the lowest tax ever proposed on marijuana in this country. The lowest tax. Second of all, that $35 in tax is the only tax possible. All these cities, there's 17 or 8 of them now, 18 of them now in Oregon that have passed these resolutions or ordinances to tax marijuana. Those will be invalidated when Measure 91 passes. Those evaporate and go away. Only the state can tax marijuana and only at $35 an ounce. Now the OLCC can review those taxes and they can advise whether the taxes should go up or down. But that advisement has to be in accordance with the intent of the law, which is very clear about derailing the black market. So any raise by the OLCC that would take the price of marijuana grossly over the price of the black market is not going to stand legislative scrutiny or judicial scrutiny. As far as it competing with liquor that it sells in its own stores, the state gets a cut of the taxes that comes off of this, whether they're selling liquor or they're selling marijuana. If it competes with marijuana, they're still getting some tax in. Another complaint here. Let me just get to the final complaint before I run out of time. And that is, this Measure 91's just not good enough. We can wait till 2016. Folks, you are not going to get a better legalization plan than what is offered by Measure 91, which is already the most liberal legalization plan ever offered in the history of man that's made the ballot and has a chance to pass. Now, 2012, you got Measure 80, unlimited production, unlimited cultivation, unlimited possession at home, right? Unlimited. How'd that do? Oh, it got 46% and lost. So what happened 2 years later? You got something more conservative that was 8 ounces and 4 plants. If that loses, do you think 2016 comes around and tries to give you more? Or does 2016 come around and say, oh yeah, well, we overreached in 2014 with 4 plants and 8 ounces. We better cut back. That's exactly what's going to happen if Measure 91 doesn't pass in 2014. Everybody's going to take it as a notice that there's a backlash now against legalization. And folks, this isn't just Oregon. This is a national issue we're talking about. They won't stop talking about how, well, see, Oregon failed 2 years in a row. See, after Washington and Colorado passed, there's buyer's remorse. Nobody wants to legalize anymore. And that makes everyone trying to pass in 2016 have a much higher hurdle to have to clear, and they'll produce much more restrictive legalization. This is the linchpin. Oregon is it. If we pass, the future of legalization is bright and open. If we do not pass, the future of legalization is tight and restricted. Mark my words. That's all the time we got. Thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it.